Jennifer Palmieri about her book, Dear Madam President. Thanks for being with us on Women's Focus.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Susan. Thanks for having me.
We're all sort of recuperating still after the election, even though it's more than a year away. And you give us a new perspective to look at it, both to look at what happened during the election and what we need to do in the future. And you especially say that we need to understand what this election was all about. And I like that idea. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I learned a lot in this campaign. I've been in politics for a long time, for 20 years, but I still, even with all the experience that I had had, I didn't appreciate what a big deal it was going to be to elect the first woman president or how hard it was going to be. But I did feel that I learned a lot about, you know, what's at the root of the obstacles that stand in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because I have worked in politics for 20 years and, you know, was really lucky to be able to work for both President Clinton and President Obama. I worked in the West Wing of the White House for 12 years. I have a perspective about, you know, how women can do well at these very high levels. And I think all of us, as you said, Susan, are trying to understand what this election was about. I think there will probably be endless interest in it. And where do women go from here, and how do we bring the country back together? What Trump's victory signaled to me, and I think to a lot of women, we just sort of instinctually knew this, was it proved to us that the way we were pursuing ambition and the way we were leading our lives in the professional and political spheres was outdated and broken. And, you know, if Donald Trump can be president, anything is possible, and we're going to engage in the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted. I felt, you know, empowered by that notion that we're not following this old set of rules anymore. They clearly do not work. I was right to have those doubts, and we're going to lead it in a new way. And that's what the book explores.
I like that, because we keep saying, what did we do wrong? And of course, there's a lot of criticism of Hillary and what mm-hmm. she did wrong or what the campaign did wrong and that sort of thing. And you just throw that all aside and say,
yeah,
that's not
think
the
that
point.
I just don't think this point. I think, you know, I get asked a lot, why didn't you go to Wisconsin? It's like, okay, so if we thought we needed to go to Wisconsin, we would have gone. We were wrong, okay? But we're not going to learn a lot by continuing to, you know, focus on these very tactical and superficial questions.
Yes.
Or, you know, why didn't she have a better answer in emails? It's like, how about let's explore why emails became such a pivotal issue. Let's get at the root of what that's about. Let's get at the root of what this division is about. Let's get at a root of, like, I felt that the 2016 campaign was a reckoning. It seemed to be a reckoning of these frustrations that have been under the surface for a very long time, decades in some way, sometimes even hundreds of years.
And you're not talking about women's frustrations now. You're talking about people in general.
Beyond everybody. Everyone. Women too, but
mm-hmm.
everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't, you know, I don't accept that. Sure, Hillary is a human and she's not perfect and she makes mistakes. I think any man would have overcome whatever mistakes that she made. What it revealed to me was that we still really struggle with how women with ambition are viewed.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loved Hillary's concession speech.
Yes, you bring that out. I'd love that. Because we like
right?
women conceding.
Sure, because here's what's okay for a woman to do, be a gracious loser.
Yeah.
And the speech was good. I mean, I was very proud of her that day, but that took so much strength to get through that. And people would say to me, her friends even, and supporters, well, where was this Hillary when it mattered? Why didn't we see this side of her during the campaign? Because what a campaign is about is saying, I believe I am the best person on the planet to be the president of the United States. I want the most important job on the planet, and here are all the reasons why I am better than that guy. Okay, that's not something we like hearing a woman say.
Yeah.
It's just not. And we've made a lot of progress. in the last 100 years, but it's only been 100 years. You know, women have only had the right to vote for 100, not even 100 years, 98 years. And we've only been engaging in the workplace for, you know, in the professional workplace for less than 100 years. And those worlds, politics, business, those worlds were created by men to be a comfortable place for their particular qualities. And I think what Hillary and women of her generation had to do for the baby boomers, with all of the glass ceilings they broke in politics and businesses and the arts, they had to prove that I can do the job just the same way a man can. No allowances need to be made for the fact that I am a woman. Nothing will be different. And that's what Hillary had to do, you know. And I think she proved, people believed she could do the job, and she got 3 million more votes. But in running her like that to prove she could do the job just the same way as a man, you know, what occurred to me very late was we made her a female facsimile of the qualities we look for in a male president.
Mm-hmm. Instead of bringing out what we should have been looking for in her. I did a lot of programs on misogyny leading up to the election, trying to show people what was happening and trying to sort of gear everyone to look through what was actually being said to what should be said.
And, I mean, the hatred of her, the lock-her-up rallies, all of that, it's just irrational. I mean, unless the woman was truly guilty of mass murder, she couldn't be deserving of that kind of hatred. It had to be about, you know, it just had to be about something else.
Yeah, something bigger. One of the things that I got out of your book, and it was well into it, was that the most important thing that Hillary's doing is what she's doing now after the election. I mean, I think almost she couldn't have been elected. We needed somebody to sort of do this dry run. But now she's really doing something wonderful, and she's becoming popular. I was just in New York. She was speaking, and I tried to get a ticket, and there was no way of getting a ticket. She filled the room. And now she's showing us a different look at politics, I guess.
Well, she's free now, and we look at her differently. You know, she's the same person, but we look at her differently because she's not a person with ambition right now.
Yeah, that was
the thing. She's not a woman with ambition. So she can be, there's not as many distractions, and I think she's heard, and she's obviously speaking very frankly about, you know, what she experienced and what problems she thinks we still have to address. I think that history is going to look at what happened to her and the crazy gauntlet that she had to endure. And I just believe it's going to conclude that that is what had to happen to the first woman, and she is a hero for having gone through it.
And she's showing herself as a hero now, I think.
The fortitude in that woman to get up every day and face the challenges that she faced every day and get up the next day and do it again is truly remarkable. But that is the person that she really is. You know, on my first day of the campaign, she sat me down to share all that had happened to her and how the press and the public had experienced her and reacted to her over the decades and decades. And she laid it all out, and she said, you know, she's clearly confounded by it all. You know, sometimes the press and the public like her, sometimes they don't. She tries different things. She tries to be open to criticism. She doesn't really get it. And she said at the end, I'm just a simple and serious person, and I don't understand why I provoke such rage in people. And it was a really sad moment because you saw that there's this, you know, there's this thing, this phenomenon that's Hillary Clinton, and then there's this person who's just doesn't resemble anything like the caricature. And I don't think that's a failing of hers to not communicate well or of our team of not to communicate her well. I just believe that she has been somebody for 40 years, has been stepping just a little outside of the role women traditionally have played, and it confounds us, vexes us. We don't know what to think of her. There's something about her we just don't like.
Well, let's talk about how you decided, first of all, that you should write the book, and then the process of getting yourself together to write it, because that was interesting in how you came back after the campaign.
Right. So afterwards, you know, I was pretty devastated in the beginning and also scared, just really frightened about what was going to happen to the country.
Mm-hmm.
But after a couple of months, I thought that I wanted to write a book, that I saw women doing really hard things in my life between Hillary and then my friend Elizabeth Edwards, my sister Dana, who passed away last year. I'd done hard things, and that I'd learned some lessons that would be useful to women now. And I was really inspired to see that women were not feeling cowed by the election, but were fighting back and leading anyways. But initially, people weren't interested, right? I got like, there was not, you know, people said, unless you have something really juicy to say about Hillary, that no one's going to be interested in you. And there's not really juicy things to say about Hillary, nor would I tell people if there were. So I kind of put it aside. And interestingly, I participated in some of the post-campaign mortems and people writing books, and that was a pretty frustrating experience because that's like, why do these guys get to tell my story?
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back at it with some new agents, Republican men, actually, and they gave me really great advice. They said, make it future-oriented and just start writing. Just start putting down on paper everything that you've learned. Don't be scared of the things that are raw or painful. That's going to be real. That's going to ring true to people. And, you know, dig deep and don't hold back and see what you got. And I wrote like 20 pages of what I had experienced and what I learned from it, and gave that to an editor who said, this is great. It's optimistic. It's forward-looking. Make it a letter to the first woman president.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
I was like, what a smart idea, Gretchen Young of Grand Central Publishing. After having a rough couple of years, I feel like the good Lord did bestow some gifts upon me, including this wonderful editor who really got and thought and believed that as dismal as things looked in the summer of 2017 when I started this, that by the time we got to the spring of 18, people were going to be wanting and ready for something that was forward-looking and optimistic.
Well, as I was reading through the book, I was kind of thinking that you were talking to the next woman president and that that would be an easier job, an easier take, because of Hillary having gone through this ordeal. And then as I was reading it, I was thinking, uh-oh, you're not really saying that. You're thinking that that woman is going to have a hard time, too.
I think she's going to have a harder time than she should.
Yes.
But I think, you know, but I think it's going to be easier. Look at 2008. When Hillary ran in 2008, people weren't sure that a woman could do all aspects of the job. They weren't sure a woman could be commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
And she confronted that, and she convinced everybody. And that's not a question now. People believe that a woman can be commander-in-chief. So instead, the questions revolved around, well, why does she want the job? It's like, we're still a little uneasy with this woman stepping out. And
being ambitious, as you say.
And being ambitious. And she did win. You know, I mean, she did get more votes.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So it proved, and she did it the hard way. She did it the way where she wasn't embracing all of herself or having all of her full self being seen. And I think the next woman, because we lived through this, when you hear, well, there's something about her I just don't like, our ears are going to perk up a little bit and think, well, what's that about? Well, I'm not sure that's right. And you just see that I think that the election confirmed for a lot of women that we were playing by an outdated set of rules, and the next woman's going to be able to do this a little differently, and the women around her are going to see her differently because of what we've all experienced in our own lives. So I do think it's going to be better, but I also want to be realistic.
It's not going
to
be a shoo-in.
People,
yeah.
That it's still harder and just different. It's just different than it is for men.
Well, you make an interesting point that people like women in office, but it's the candidate part that they don't like, that they have problems with.
But it is, they do think, we expect women are going to do a good job. We like women. We think they're quite capable and responsible, and that when Hillary was a senator, she was very popular with her colleagues in the Senate and with her state. She was very popular. When she ran for Senate, not so much. When she was Secretary of State, we really liked her. When she ran for president, not so much. And people really liked her as Secretary of State. You know, one of the things that we found in the campaign through our own research was that the attribute of hers that people liked the best was that she had been willing to go work for President Obama as a Secretary of State, even though he had beat her in the presidential campaign.
And not that she was good at handling the other countries that she did.
Nope.
Not at doing her job.
That's not it. That wasn't it, Susan. That was not what they liked. I mean, they may have appreciated that, but what they really liked, and, you know, what that told me was that they liked that she was able to put her own interests and ambition aside and, you know, work for President Obama, even though he had defeated her dream of becoming the first woman president. And what it told me was we have a hard time with women and ambition. We think if they're ambitious, we think that's all they are, right? I think there are some people who really believe, a lot of people really believe that Hillary had this driving ambition her entire life to be the first woman president. And it had to be that. Otherwise, it didn't make sense to us. You know, we don't think about women can be, you can be part ambitious and you can be compassionate. You can be ambitious and nurturing. You can be ambitious and want to be in it just to solve problems. And that's what your ambition is about. But it didn't quite make sense to us when it came to her.
Well, one of the things you say is we need to rewrite the rules. And I've been doing a look by interviews with various people looking at women in power and seeing whether if they get into a position where they should have power, whether they actually have power. And I think that you're sort of suggesting that we need to change the rules and you want to throw out what we've been doing so far.
Yeah, I think that you have to... A lot of women say they feel the imposter syndrome where either, you know, at school or at work, they feel that they don't really believe at some point they're going to be exposed as being an imposter. And there's some element of truth to that because you are trying to fit into a man's world.
Yes.
And the way I think about it is women have done great in the last 100 years in making progress about how we succeed in a man's world. And now we get to make it a world for us both. And that's different. So, you know, one way, relatively provocative, if seemingly trivial way, I think that can happen is by women feeling free to cry at work. I am a big crier. I'm somebody who, I will cry, you know, I don't sob openly, but I will cry when I'm frustrated or angry, and more often when something really moves me. I'm often moved to tears because something I have to say is really important to me, or what I'm hearing someone else express is very moving and or inspiring or important. And, you know, that happens to me many times a day, particularly in the Obama White House, because we dealt with some really heady, tough stuff and really hard human impact on the issues that we worked on. And it's often talking to the President of the United States, my, you know, tears would well up my eyes. Often. And it happened on the campaign trail. It happens talking to reporters, and it can even happen on television. And it doesn't mean I'm not strong. I'm really strong. It means I'm passionate. It means I care a lot. And I shouldn't mute all that. And women, other women shouldn't either. And men shouldn't mute all that. And I was explaining this to one woman who was interviewing me, who said at the end, she said, well, what do you say to people who say it's just not professional to cry in the workplace? I say it is. I say it is. You know, we're not doing it anymore. My whole relatively adult life, you know, from maybe 12 years old on, I've had two conversations in my head, right? There's the conversation you have, the first thought that comes to you, which tells you what you really believe in your heart. And then there's the conversation where you compare that to how you're going to be judged when you say that. Can you defend it? Is it what society says it's okay for you to do?
Or should
you be attacked?
Yeah.
And only then, after you do that internal debate, do you speak. I think that's why women change their minds. I think that's why some women can be can take a while to collect their thoughts because we're always doing that. And I'm not doing it anymore. I'm just not doing it. So I just say what I think. You know, people say things like, well, you know, you got to remember, no one's irreplaceable in the workplace. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. People are irreplaceable. They leave. They're gone. Someone comes. It's not them. They haven't been replaced. It's just something different. And I just think all of the ways that we think about women and power and how we're supposed to behave in the workplace, it's like we're like guests in a foreign land, and we look to observe the local customs and see what's acceptable, and we moderate our behavior, modify our behavior to fit that. And that's what I mean about how we operate in a man's world. And, like, we're not doing it anymore. And you just see, I don't know if all women articulated the same way I just did, but we kind of sense it. We just know. And that's the inspiring and empowering part about being a woman in America right now.
So do you think it's possible to make these changes? You talk
they are.
About
They're happening.
How it has to
People are doing
happen.
It.
Okay.
Tammy Duckworth had a baby. She's like,
That's
you know,
right.
nursing on the Senate floor. women are running for office as is. They're not worrying about their resume and whether it's perfect. They're, you know,
who's going to take care of the children?
Huh?
Or who's going to take care of the children?
Yeah, they're just, or like, why, you know, it's not quite ready. They're just not living that way. And so I think this is already happening. And, you know, I have a, particularly since it's the women's hour, I can share.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing. I don't have brothers. I had three older sisters. And I never understood why we consider women to be the weaker sex. I don't get it. Women make people. What's more powerful than that? Women make people. And I've just had a sense that men are, you know, at an instinctual level intimidated by that. And, you know, that's what some of the power play is about. And that's what might ultimately make them uneasy. But I think what's happening now is revolutionary. I really do. I think that this is the moment where women are going to figure out the way that they get to lead that makes the most sense for them.
You talk about a rebirth that we need to have, mm-hmm. and that it's going to come from the ground up. And I was kind of wondering about that, because you also say that everyone has to come together and work together. I sort of thought, I don't know. It that just may be another faction coming to the fore.
I don't think that. No, I mean, I think that because what I see, what I have in my mind is the women's movement, the women's marches.
Okay.
The Parkland students. The women running for office, the women who are, you know, my sister who's a preschool teacher in Virginia, really not interested in the politics, but now she's like, okay, where's the next protest? Where am I supposed to be this weekend?
Oh.
You know, right? That's what I mean. I mean that we are revitalizing democratic institutions. I think I look at Trump as disruption come to politics. He's the person that proved the system was entirely broken, or
okay.
the way that we had been engaging in politics in the last, you know, 20 plus years is broken. And it's happening to institutions across the board. And I think that he's not the answer. His way is not the answer. Some people think that. But I think that what it really means is that we have to revitalize these democratic institutions, the way we do elections. And I think a lot of people who didn't support him and were surprised by his win have thought, wow, this is on me. I got to participate. I got to be a citizen. We just happen to agree, our country only works because we all happen to agree to live by a certain set of rules. And that's what I mean. And
that's the
why I feel
new energy.
It's going to come together.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's the new energy that you feel coming.
Yeah, Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. Right. I do. I really do think that. I feel. Yeah. I'm optimistic about that. I do.
You also say that everyone is talking about what the Democratic Party message needs to be, and that's something that isn't what we should mm-hmm. be talking about. You want to
right.
change that.
I think that's going. That is. It's just not going to come from Washington. You know. That's
okay.
just. It's just. It's going to come from individual candidates, who, you know, this is the way a fire purifies a forest. I think a big election loss like this can force you know, members of a party to really, to, you know, have a big talent show and see who's able to best really think through what the country needs now and who's the best person, you know, to lead the country. You know, I see that happening at the grassroots level. I see a new kind of politics being done. I see people are voting in bigger numbers than before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the answer is going to come. It's going to come from people. It's going to come from candidates. It's not going to come from institutions.
If a woman came to you and said, I want to be the next woman president,
mm-hmm.
would you get on board, or do you think it's not time enough?
Oh, no, I think it's very possible.
Okay.
Hillary won by, she got 3 million more votes, and it was a nightmare. Hopefully the next time she doesn't, you know, I mean, running against Donald Trump is going to be, wow. I mean, I can't imagine what 2020 was like, but, you know, women, people who don't support Trump, women and men both, are engaging in a whole new way. And so I think it would be, you know, she could do it. She could for sure do it. I mean, now there's some people, after Hillary lost, a lot of people's reaction was like, well, that was crazy. Obviously, we're not doing that again. We can't have a woman in 2020 as our nominee. And now I hear some people saying, well, all the energy is around women. We have to have a nominee that's
okay.
a woman. If
Good.
We don't have a nominee that's a woman, we'll, you know, step in all our energy. So I think it can happen.
What will you be doing in the next campaign, in the next couple of years? Would you want to work for a man again, or what? Where are you?
I love men. Some of my favorite husbands are men. My husband is a man. I engage with men in the world. They're here too. I find them to be great partners. I've always found, you know, the men I've worked with and the men I've worked for, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, in particular, remarkable men that I've learned a lot from and did a lot of good in the world. So
I'm just saying, what do you see as the future? What do you want to hitch your star to?
Myself, right? That's what we're all doing now. We're doing it for ourselves. And I mean, I will always engage in politics. I really care about it. I continue to do work in the nonprofit world and working on issues like immigration and education. And I love writing too, though. I feel like it is a way to connect with people and share experiences. And, you know, no one looks at the world today and says, wow, we have it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more perspectives we hear from and the more that we voice what we are feeling, the more we're breaking down divisions, because I think a lot of us are feeling the same way, and it's useful to share it.
So you really could have more effect by doing that, by getting people thinking about things and by
alerting them. I suspect that writing this book had more, the effort I put right into this book probably had more impact than the effort I put into the campaign.
Okay.
I believe that.
Okay. So do you have another book with you? Or
in
your mind?
I'm playing around with some different ideas, but I would love to do it again. I do enjoy the process and the chance to think really deeply about what you've learned and what's happening in the country now. It seems to be a useful thing to do.
Yeah. As I said, you know, I even changed my way of thinking as I was reading and said, oh, that's what she's saying. So
I had my book agents, who are Republican men, they both read it and liked it a lot and said, you know, a lot of stuff about Hillary, a lot of stuff just about it. It's like, you know, I had never looked at it that way before. It's a really interesting perspective. So it's gratifying to hear.
If only you could have done it before, before the election.
I didn't know it before. I didn't know it. I had to live through it.
Well, yeah. I talked to a friend and said I was going to be doing, a friend who has been very involved in politics and another baby boomer as I am. And I said, I'm going to have this conversation. What shall I ask? And she said, well, ask her what will happen to those of us who are still, who are sort of on the shelf, who've been doing this for a long time and feel kind of left out at this point.
Oh, I hate that. Don't feel that way. I mean, look at what I find remarkable is, you know, noted before, the, and this is why I had certain women in my head as I was writing this book, including women, a number of women from the baby boomer generation. And it's not, I think about it as, oh, wow, they contributed a lot. But wow, they are contributing a lot. And they understand, you know, they understood how much they had to fight for their voices to be heard. And now's the time that we get to learn from them. Uh-huh. And, you know, what I love how young women think Ruth Bader Ginsburg is such a rock star.
Yeah, they do.
They think Madeleine Albright is a rock star. They get it. They see the confidence that these women had to have to just keep going and keep asserting themselves. And it's interesting, I find, you know, a renaissance happening with men and older men and women both, but, you know, particularly with older women that were these pioneers. You know, what I know is anyone who puts their mind to something matters. And I learned that from watching women go through really difficult times. And also, it's the only thing we got, right? We don't have control over our lives. All we can do is put our best effort into something that we believe matters. And, you know, that's how I feel about the campaign. I did the best I could. It was important to do. We didn't succeed. I don't regret it. And I made a difference. And I think women of the baby boomer generation should certainly think that. And, you know, but I want all women to think that.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We'll look forward to you saying that over and over again as these changes come apart, come to pass.
Yes.
Thanks a lot for being with us on
Women's Focus. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, it's Jennifer Palmieri, and the name of the book is Dear Madam President.